Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Planning Commission meeting of July 19th, 2016. I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order, and we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, if everyone would please rise.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If we could please have a roll call.
Commissioner Sloan.
Here.
Commissioner Martinez.
Here.
Commissioner Broadway.
Here.
Chairman McKenzie.
Here.
Commissioner Whitmore is excused tonight.
Okay, item number four, minutes. We have no minutes this evening. Okay. We'll keep moving right down to item five as a little bit of Planning Commission business before we get into the heart of the agenda. So election of officers, that time has come once again. So we have a vice chair currently. Historically, we've moved the vice chair into the chair role. I'm perfectly happy with that if everybody else is happy with that scenario, but obviously we can discuss that. And then we need to select a vice chair and go from there. So I'll take motions or discussion or whatever you all would like to do.
I can make a motion.
Well, I move that Commissioner Sloan, or rather Broadway, as our vice chair, go to the chair position and Commissioner Sloan to the vice chair position.
So we have a motion. Any discussion before a second? I will second it. So we have a motion and a second with Commissioner Broadway moving up to the chairmanship, Commissioner Sloan coming in as vice chair. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed or abstentions? Seeing none. Thank you. So at this time, we'll need to shift seats. And now's the time to choose your chairs if you wish to move anywhere. I'm going that way.
Does that say vice chair there, or just your name?
It does not.
Oh, okay. You want to be a little closer?
Actually, when Brian comes back, I'll sit a little closer tonight.
Oh, you're going to have to change the names.
Thank you, Mark.
Maybe no name.
Thank you, Mark. The next item on our agenda is correspondence. Do we have any correspondence this evening?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Item seven is citizens addressing the commission on non-agenda items. That would be any item that we do not have listed on the packet for today's meeting. Do we have any citizens who wish to address the commission on a non-agenda item this evening? Seeing none, we will move to consent items, and we appear to have no consent items today. So we will therefore move to public hearings. Our first public hearing item is item 8, William Jessup University Tentative Parcel Map DL2015-005. And we have a staff report.
Yes, sir. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, this application is a request for approval of a tentative parcel map to allow the subdivision of an approximately 108-acre portion of the William Jessup University site into several parcels ranging in size from 0.8 to 25.3 acres and a 64-acre remainder lot. No grading improvements or development are proposed as a part of this map. The city's environmental coordinator has determined that the project is exempt from review under the California Environmental Quality Act. Therefore, a notice of exemption was prepared. Staff finds that the proposed map is consistent with the applicable general plan and zoning, land use designations, the Rockland Subdivision Ordinance, and determined it to be compatible with existing and potential surrounding development. The easterly half of the extension of University Avenue through the MAP area was completed several months ago. Proposed parcels 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7 would have access directly to the street and or the existing right-of-way. Parcel 1 has access from the ring road around the existing university campus, and parcel 5 would have access from University Avenue by an easement across parcel 6. The remainder parcel has frontage on both University Avenue and Sunset Boulevard. Existing easements for utilities and parking would remain in place. No street or frontage improvements are required as a part of this MAP. At such time as parcels 5, 6, and or 7 are developed, a determination would be made regarding construction requirements for the remaining portions of University Avenue. Staff does support the proposed parcel MAP with the inclusion of the conditions of approval as drafted, because it will not change the anticipated land use or the intensity of land use on the site and is consistent with relevant city ordinances. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'll do my best to respond.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the commissioners? Okay. Seeing none, is the applicant here today?
Good evening. I'm Ron Wood with
I'll push a red button. Yeah.
There we go.
Thank you, Ron.
Good evening. I'm Ron Wood with RFE Engineering. We are the civil engineers and the surveyors on this project. And Jim Jessup from William Jessup is here with me. We agree with the staff report on this and the conditions. And if you have any questions for us, we're here to answer them. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Any questions for the applicant? No? Okay. We will then open the meeting to the public. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to comment on the project? Seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back to the commissioners for deliberation. Who would like to begin?
I'll start. I've reviewed the staff report and agree with its findings in that the subdivision is generally in alignment with the general plan designations and zoning. There's really no change in land use. So to me, it's just the next step in the process of developing these parcels in alignment with the general plan. And as such, I support the project.
Thank you.
I concur. I have really nothing to add. It's consistent with zoning and general plan. So I support the project as proposed.
I also concur with my fellow commissioners and find the CEQA general rule finding to be appropriate in this case, given that there's no potential for significant effects as a result of the action we are taking. So I support the project.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. And also, I find that the proposed project is consistent with the applicable general plan, as well as the zoning and land use designations in addition to our subdivision ordinance. And as such, I look forward to future projects coming forward to the commission, and I support the project. Therefore, I will look for a motion from the commission.
I will go ahead and take a shot at this one. I'll move that we, as the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland, approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland approving a notice of exemption, William Jessup University Tentative Parcel Map DL 2015-0005. And at this time, I'll also include the second resolution. So I'll also move to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland approving a tentative parcel map, William Jessup University Tentative Parcel Map DL 2015-0005.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been motioned and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And approved unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will move now to item 9 on the agenda, the Northwest Rockland General Development Plan Text Amendment, PDG 99-02, et al., PDG 2016-0002. And I believe we have a staff presentation.
We do.
all my buttons going here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations on your chairman and vice chairmanship. Laura Webster, Economic and Community Development. The request before you today is a text amendment to the Northwest Rockland General Development Plan. The project area is generally located east of Highway 65, west of Whitney Oaks Drive, south of the Rockland-Lincoln city limit line, and north of Stanford Ranch. The applicant is Eric Anderson on behalf of Sunset Rancho's investors. There are, sorry, let me get my buttons here, five main components to the text amendment. The first is to consolidate recent previously approved amendments into a single document, to modify certain residential development standards in the PD 2.1 through PD 3.3 categories, to add a new PD 22 plus residential category, to modify the code section dealing with multifamily building heights, addressing transitions through design review, and to complete various technical edits associated with previously approved modifications to maintain internal consistency within the document. Looking at the changes to the PD 2.1 through PD 3.3 residential categories, the amendment would change the minimum lot size from 9,000 to 7,000 square feet. However, I would add that wasn't the main impetus for this application. All the PD 2.1 and 3.3 areas have already been mapped through tentative subdivision map applications, so this would not result in any new lots being created within those categories. The change would also affect the interior minimum lot width from 70 feet to 65 feet. Minimum lot widths for corner lots would change from 75 to 60 feet. The front setback would go from 25 to 20 feet. The front porch setback from 20 feet to 15 feet. And the maximum lot coverage for single stories from 45 to 50%. And making the lot coverage for single and two-story homes the same in that particular category. These changes have been requested so that builders in Whitney Ranch can better respond to what they've had as increasing market demands. The approach of allowing the reduced front setbacks, for example, and creating a higher percentage of acceptable lot coverage for single-story homes would allow the builders to provide single-story homes with a large square footage and ideally incorporate more single-family product into each neighborhood. These types of standards have been utilized in other areas in the city. For example, similar concepts were recently approved by the City Council for the Croftwood or Crown Point subdivision, Stanford Ranch Parcel 69, Rockland 60, and the Stanford Ranch Two Oaks subdivision. The proposal also includes the creation of a new PD 22 plus zoning category. That new category would require a minimum density of 22 units per acre. It has similar development standards to the existing PD 20 zone already approved within Northwest Rockland, except that the maximum height limit would be 50 feet instead of 35 feet. The zoning category is only being created at this time, and it is not being applied to any specific sites. The creation of the category is considered necessary to help implement the housing element ultimately. There have been several times in the past when we've talked about multifamily projects at this type of density, and staff has been asked for examples of what such developments might look like and feel like. Therefore, I just want to take a few minutes to walk you through some recent examples in Rockland. So starting with the Vicara and the Montessa projects in Whitney Ranch, these projects are three stories and a combined total of 435 units. The densities range from 22 to 24 dwelling units per acre, and the buildings on that site are up to 40 feet in height. Next, we have the Garnet Creek Apartments. This project is currently under construction on Granite Drive. It contains both two- and three-story buildings and a total of 260 units. The density of that multifamily component is 22.5 dwelling units per acre, and the buildings range from 27 to 38 feet in height. I've also included, hopefully you can read them, a slide of the Garnet Creek multifamily development standards, and which is from the zoning document for Garnet Creek, and it shows that the allowed principal height of the buildings is 50 feet and four stories, with the potential for additional flexibility in all development standards subject to justification through approval of design review. The last project I'll share with you is the Bella Vita project, which was approved on Pacific Street. It was approved by your commission a couple of years ago, but has not yet been constructed. It consists of 140 units within a 200,000-square-foot four-story structure. The density is 21.8 dwelling units per acre, and the building ranges from 50 feet in height for the main structure and up to 64 feet at the tower component. The last component of the changes I wanted to touch on is the proposed modification to the existing special conditions relating to multifamily building heights. The proposed changes to the language are shown with strikeout and red highlight on this slide. They're also in your staff report. This change has been recommended because the requirement to obtain a use permit in order to construct a three-story project is onerous to some developers and actually contrary to the city's mandate from the state to accommodate higher density projects. With the safeguard of design review in place, the city can maintain its sensitivity to building heights in locations where design modifications are warranted to address site conditions and surrounding land uses. Possible design solutions could require stepping buildings down on the edges and concentrating density deeper within the project site using increased setbacks, increased building separation, and landscape buffers. The proposed text change is also consistent with what has been approved in the more recent zoning documents, such as that I just shared with you for Garnet Creek, and will provide what may be as needed flexibility in multifamily project designs. The proposed text changes discussed this evening and presented in the staff report packet have been found categorically exempt under the Environmental Quality Act, so a notice of exemption has been prepared for the Commission's consideration. The Commission's actions on this item tonight would be a recommendation to the City Council. The City Council will have the final approval authority, and I believe representatives of the project are in the audience this evening. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available to answer questions.
Thank you, Laura. Questions from the Commissioners?
Laura, you mentioned at the beginning the change in minimum lot size from 9,000 to 7,000, but that the areas with the zoning were already mapped. Mm-hmm. So why, I mean, would a lot line adjust to play around with lot size, or why make the lot size change?
Well, I think part of the, and the applicants can certainly speak to this as well, but I think part of the issue was we had a category already created that they preferred the other development standards in, and so they were trying to consolidate that density within that category, mainly for the development standard purposes. The fact that there's a 7,000 minimum lot size in that category, I don't think necessarily means they want to go out and modify everything down to 7,000 square feet. In fact, when I talked to Peter Bridges, one of the proponents today, he said that wasn't the case, that they're planning to proceed with their final maps as the lots are generally designed and not looking for that component of it. It's just a coincidence that it occurred that way.
Just to add on to what Laura said, everything she said is correct. But in consolidating the two zone districts, we did not want to inadvertently create a whole bunch of non-conforming lots for people that had the 7,000-square-foot lots. That's the reason that staff and the applicant agreed to go to the smaller lot size in the consolidated zone district.
Okay. And then the question about the PD 22, so there's a gap between greater than 20 and less than 22. Is the 22 to meet RENA? I mean, that's like the minimum amount the state's saying.
Right. In the last housing element update, 22 was the negotiated minimum, so that's why we started with that number.
Okay. And then lastly, there's an exhibit. I forgot to look closely. I don't know if you have that in your display.
What figure? I don't have it.
It's the zoning categories within the general develop or Whitney Ranch.
It's right. I did not bring that on a display.
I mean,
tonight.
I would assume, but it would be subject to a rezone and design review wherever they want to apply this PD 22.
Correct.
Just creating the category.
Correct. Another part of the effort, as we described, was just we had so many incremental changes to the general development plan document that we wanted to consolidate it and have a fresh new consolidated document. And staff was aware that this PD-22 issue is also out there, and we may want to look at properties in Northwest Rockland at some point in order to address RENA. And so we thought this was a good time to present that information, not apply it to specific lots. Obviously, we'd have to work with property owners and bring back zone changes and that sort of thing. But we thought, why not create the category now so that we have it in place if and when we decide to implement it?
Okay. Thanks.
I have one. So just by way of disclosure, I did meet with the applicant before the packet came out. Unfortunately, I didn't have this question when I met with him, so I'll ask it now. Hopefully staff can address it. In the general development plan, kind of red line and strikeouts in the back of the packet, there's a shift in the number of units. Mm-hmm. It's not significant, but what's the genesis of that shift in units? Because it goes from 2,889 single-family lots to 2,937 mm-hmm. single-family lots.
Again, I'll let the applicant chime in specifically, but I believe with all the zone changes that have taken place incrementally over time, the total needed to change and reflect that consolidated information.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's
Thank
still
you.
Within the parameters of the EIR.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. And so, Laura, just clarifying, so the addition of the PD-22, it's basically just adding that residential zoning category, but we do not have any parcels that specifically are zoned for PD-22.
Correct.
So in order for those to be zoned PD-22, so to have that on the record, what is the step that would have to take place in order for that to occur?
Right. Depending on the proponent, either the city or an applicant would have to come forward to both the Planning Commission and the City Council with a proposal for a zone change on property somewhere within Northwest Rockland where they were proposing that. And that would go through the standard environmental review and public hearing processes before both bodies.
Okay. And so this step, in essence, enables the establishment, should that be desired, of the PD-22, as opposed to currently that is not an option because it's not listed as part of the zoning available.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then I had a question, and I'm sorry, I do want to state that I also participated in ex parte communication with the applicant. There were no decisions made or commitments, but it was informational only. And one additional question. In the there's a strikeout of a word that, to me, I was just looking to understand, and I know we'll probably have the applicant speak to that as well. We had had a discussion on that where it states that the varied front yard setbacks are required, and changing that to just encouraged. So in making that change, is it really necessary? I know in looking at their design and looking at the homes that the setbacks that occur based, again, on the different frontings and the different designs that we're achieving that. But moving away from I become concerned when I see the use of the word encouraged as opposed to required, because required certainly means that that is going to exist as opposed to be encouraged or strongly encouraged. So is there a reason that that verbiage is being recommended?
I think it was requested by the applicant, and I think it is their intention through the development of the project because of their own aesthetic desires to continue with variations. They can speak to the preference, but I believe it was to provide some flexibility where there may just be an instance where because of a feature on one house, maybe an extended porch or something else, you're not able to consistently provide that in every instance. But I would let them speak to that.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so we'll leave that up to the applicant then. Thank you, Laura. And actually, if I will go ahead and I will open, I believe we have all of our commissioners, so I will open it up to the applicant. So please.
Thank you, Commissioner, I appreciate it. My name is Eric Anderson. I'm with IHB Capital, the general managing partner for Sunset Ranchos Investors, the owner of Whitney Ranch. my response to the shift from required and 3 feet is encouraged setback. So we're trying to shift from a very, very programmatic 3-foot measurement that's required from house frontage to house frontage. We're achieving that and better. So, and we're doing that through the development of the architecture and also in the development plan and the way each of the houses are oriented from in a continuous fashion. So we wanted to leave it more open because that's how we're managing it, through architecture development, through development plan approvals, and also plot plan approvals before they're submitted to the city for permit applications.
Okay. And my intent isn't to be difficult. It's just, again, the language just is somewhat troublesome for me in using the word encouraged, because when you speak to the 3-foot setback, we're actually looking at the minimum, striking that language of a minimum 3-foot variation. So we're achieving what you just stated. And I think where I become a little concerned is having those varied setbacks. And what I want to ensure we avoid is what has been discussed before, is the monopoly look.
Okay, sure,
you've got
sure.
home after home after home after home. I look straight down the street and I see it, you know, the frontings of those homes. So that's really my concern, and that's why I'm a bit concerned about seeing the use of encouraged as opposed to required.
I believe, and Laura, if you'd help as well, I think the architecture design guidelines that run with Whitney Ranch are more in suit with encouraged setbacks rather than the prescribed required 3-foot setback variation. So this revision helps us be more like in kind to the master document that we used to enforce this initially. So I guess the way we perceived the required was really required 3 feet rather than encouraged setbacks.
Okay.
And then we turned to our architecture design guidelines to finish up the rest of the process of review and approval.
I'm wondering also if for comfort level of the chairman, if we just change required or encouraged back to required, keep the 3-foot stricken, that gives you the flexibility of having varied front yard setbacks without having the encouraged issue.
Yeah, that's fine. I think it accomplishes the same thing.
And I felt the same way, so thank you.
That could be part of your recommendation to the council.
All right.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else, Eric, you feel you would like to present?
We're here in support of, staff put a lot of time and effort into this, and want to thank staff for that.
Mm-hmm.
Very well-drafted presentation today, and so we're in support of what's being presented to you, absent any other recommendations that you may consider, and here for any other questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions from the commissioners? No? All right. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. At this time, we will open it to public comment. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak?
Got to push the button. Nope. All right. So my name is Joe Patterson. Live in Stage Line Circle. Believe it or not, this is the first time I've been in front of the Planning Commission. So I just wanted to make a couple comments. Obviously, Peter and my friends at Sunset Ranch has done a great job developing Whitney Ranch, and it's a great place to live, and completely support what they're trying to do. I looked at this as an opportunity to say two things. One thing, and then ask a question, just sort of philosophically, and I bring this up to the city council, but more lots in the same amount of space, more homes being built over the course of the last decade. We've had thousands of houses built, and decrease of services. I feel like police and fire, hasn't increased since the bust, I guess, the Great Recession. And so that just concerns me when I look at these sort of documents, is the city going to eventually address those greater needs? Of course, it's sort of outside your purview when looking at these projects, but the other thing, I just had a question about the 22 plus was, I understand the bureaucratic nightmare that the state gives gives everybody to meet RENA and various regions and things like that in the state, but I wonder why it can't be 23 or 22, or I know we want to maintain some flexibility, but I really don't like to leave ambiguity like that, 22 unlimited, just because who knows what type projects are going to come in the future. Obviously, in Whitney Ranch, we already have projects that it seems like from the presentation exceed that. So, I mean, there's no issue with that exceeding it. It's just why can't we set it 23 or 24 or, you know, whatever else. Why does it have to be 22 plus? So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Joe. All right.
Would you like me to respond? Or?
And I do not believe we have anyone else from the public, so we'll close the public section. And if you would like to respond, Laura, I would appreciate it.
Okay. This round of the housing element update, the default density, because we're now in a metropolitan area over a certain population through the SACOG region, the default was actually 30 units per acre area-wide. The city was able to discuss with SACOG and HCD getting to a lower number based on our past history of what we could develop in the affordable range at 22 units per acre. So for this particular round, that satisfied them as a minimum. We don't know in the future what the numbers are going to end up being, and so we wanted to provide flexibility. So as part of the implementation of the housing element, the city modified the HDR zone 2 or 3 years ago to remove a specific limit from the high-density residential land use designation. And so the purpose of this is just to have a companion zone that provides that flexibility for the unknown of future state authority on that minimum.
Do you know, Laura, and I think Mr. Patterson somewhat specified the little concern in relationship to the plus being added, so 22 plus as opposed to just being 22 or being 23. Is there a reason that it's 22 plus?
I added the 22 plus because it's a little confusing for planning staff. Most of our zones throughout the city are whatever the number is behind the PD, that's the maximum number, and we didn't want there to be confusion on staff's part as to is this a minimum, is it a maximum. So for ease on the zoning map, we added the plus.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
If I might add a comment, and I think it again, speaking to Laura's first point, I don't know that we want to be back here every time SACOG tells us the number's going to change. We don't think the number's going to go down, right? I mean, we know that. But I mean, is the number next time we get a number going to be 30? Is it going to be 26? Is it going to be 27 the year after that and then back down to 24 the year after? I mean, I don't know. So, I mean, I think this gives us the ability to cover whatever it is, whenever it is. You always maintain the authority to be able to manage through the design review where we end up with the architecture and how we transition those units, where they're placed, so on and so forth. So we feel like we've got enough safeguards in place to cover your issues or concerns.
I might add just, you know, we mentioned it before, rezoning required, which requires council review, and then design review required on top of that. So, you know, is it appropriately located within the planning area, and is it designed appropriately with surrounding uses? So we're going to get other bites at the apple, you know, before it's all said and done. So.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, so we will bring it back to the commission for deliberation. Who would like to begin?
I can start. So once again, I did have ex parte communications with the applicant, part of the application actually being generated by the city relative to the density, but I did speak to the applicant. He was able to address some of my concerns relative to the 3-foot articulation, and I think some of the rest of the commissioners have this exhibit, which does explain in an aerial view what's occurring relative to residential setbacks and articulation. The houses themselves are significantly articulated, which really accomplishes what we want to the end result to be, not necessarily that you have 3 feet to 3 feet to 3 feet as you march down the street. That's not where we want to get to. So I think the change is acceptable from my perspective. With perfectly happy to go along with a change in the wording such that it eliminates the 3 feet, but still requires that articulation. So I'm good there. I do agree with Mr. Patterson relative to the concern with the 22 plus, understanding staff's explanation. Thank you, relative to why it's probably in our best interest for not only planning staff, but the commission and the council as we see projects come forward and having to be compliant with the regional housing needs allocations, having that flexibility to look at a varied density in there when it comes forward. So with that, I support the application as submitted with the one change relative to the 3-foot separation requirement.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention I too met with the applicant earlier this week. This is an evolving planning area, just like other specific plan areas, and these are adjustments to development standards consistent with other adjustments we've seen in the last probably 5 years, especially with respect to the demand for single-story homes. So I see it throughout the region, so it's not unusual. So I support the proposed changes, and obviously including the ones that were just cleanup changes that hadn't been carried forward previously to the commission. So it's just going to make a cleaner document, easier to reference. And I would also support the tweak to the language regarding the required setback but not specifying the 3 feet. I also looked at the exhibit that was provided by the applicant, and I've seen it in my own work where it's better achieved through the design of the homes, that articulation and offset, and it takes away the monotony that you're trying to avoid. So I think the guidelines do a better job by encouraging and asking for intent rather than having the strict language. So with that said, I support the project as proposed.
Thank you.
So I concur with my fellow commissioners. I think the project provides consistency between development standards in the city being used elsewhere in the city and now obviously in Whitney Ranch. And I think they provide flexibility in the design of subdivisions and layout of homes. And as my Commissioner Martinez said, in particular with one-story homes. In addition, I think the HDR minimum density change brings the city's zoning in alignment with the RENA requirements and also sets it up for future flexibility there, which makes a lot of sense to me. Obviously going forward, we'll have a crack at these projects via the Planning Commission, so we'll have a chance to review them. And I support Chairman Broadway's proposed language changes as well. So with that, I support the project. I did have ex parte communications with the applicant, and no commitments were made.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I agree with my fellow commissioners. I find the text amendment that consolidates the previously approved amendments to be appropriate. Of course, it cleans up all the documentation. I also support the modification of the residential standards. The residential standards certainly align with the other approved projects, and I support adding the PD 22 as a new residential zoning category, given that there's no existing parcels that are currently designated as PD 22. I support the technical edits that are being made based on the prior approval modifications, but of course approval with the condition that we replace or we insert the required language as opposed to encouraged, but then again approve the striking of a minimum 3-foot variation in the required being required between the adjacent single family lots. So with that, I do support the project. So with that, if there's no further discussion, I will look for a motion.
So I move that the Planning Commission approve resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending approval of a notice of exemption for the Northwest Rockland General Development Plan text amendment, PDG-99-02 et al., PDG 2016-0002, and that the Planning Commission approve resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending approval of an ordinance consolidating previously approved amendments to Exhibit C of the Northwest Rockland General Development Plan, modifying certain development standards within the PD 2.1 through 3.3 zone district, adding a new PD 22 plus zoning category, and completing other technical edits, including the edit the commission discussed regarding the encourage striking that and going back to required, but eliminating the 3-foot number on front yard setbacks for the Northwest Rockland General Development Plan text amendment PDG 9902 et al. PDG 2016-0002.
Okay. I'll second.
It's been motioned and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And approved unanimously. We will now move to non-public hearings, reports, and discussion items from the planning commissioners. So anything from the commissioners?
I just had a question. Can we get an update on the interchange when it's opening? And if you can just remind me, what are the movements onto and off the freeway?
Evening, commissioners. Public Services is overseeing the final stages of construction out there. The last I heard, they were planning end of July was going to be the opening. I don't have the exact date yet. Somebody else does, but I think it's sometime right around the end of July. The movements will be northbound off-ramp onto Whitney Ranch Parkway and a northbound on-ramp to Highway 65. And then a overcrossing so that you can make a loop movement to southbound Highway 65 from Whitney Ranch Parkway. So those are the interim improvements. Eventually, when the Placer Parkway comes in, then you'll have full interchange improvements at that location.
And is there signalization out there, or is it just stop control, like at University and?
Currently, the intersection of Whitney Ranch Parkway and University is a four-way stop control. I don't think there's the warrant yet for traffic to warrant a signalized intersection location. In future, it probably would with the development around those areas, but at this point, it'll be a stop sign controlled intersection.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I can further help with that question. It's Placer County, Caltrans, some City of Rockland. We're all moving forward hand in hand with the future expansion of that interchange. And the first phase of Placer Parkway, I happened to review that Army Corps of Engineers permit application. Public notice went out from the Corps of Engineers, so that continues to roll. But what that timeline looks like, it's a permitting question with the Corps of Engineers. You know how that process goes. So, yeah, a couple of years probably. Funding and all those other components that are necessary. So,
okay, thanks.
A question for staff. And I haven't seen anything posted on the website, but I know that UHS had pulled their application, but I know there was discussion about other properties. Have we heard anything in relationship to any other considerations? I know there's nothing posted on the web at this point.
To the best of my knowledge, no one in the city has heard any more from UHS about any alternative sites or any future plans to do anything in the city of Rockland. Mark may have heard something that I haven't, but.
No, we've not had any communication with them.
Okay. Thank you. With that, anything else from the commissioners? Okay, reports from staff.
Mr. Chairman, first off, congratulations to Greg and Brian for getting reappointed to continue to serve on the Planning Commission. We're pleased about it. We hope you are too. I believe you all got notice of the joint planning commission and council meeting for the 26th to talk about the citywide design guidelines update in architectural districts. There will not be a planning commission meeting on August 2nd. We didn't have anything ready to go, so you do get a night off. And then I did want to let you know that our new assistant planner, Nathan Anderson, started yesterday. Excuse me, associate. can't read my own writing. He was formerly at the City of Elk Grove. He's very sharp, and he'll be introduced to you at a future meeting. He had plans already scheduled for tonight or we'd be here. So that's all I had for you.
Question. I unfortunately will be in Florida moving my oldest daughter out there for school, and I will miss the meeting. Are we going to have information available online relative to the design review guidelines that are being presented?
So I believe Terry previously sent you an email that, and it may have been two emails, that would include a red line document that shows proposed changes to the existing citywide guidelines, which you're very familiar with, a link to the proposed new district architectural guidelines, which are a web-based format. And then I think it might have included some other things, maybe a presentation that we did for Utah, I think maybe that when we went to Utah. Yeah. So if you go back and look at your emails, if you wouldn't mind, we have it there. If you can't find it, shoot Terry an email. She'll shoot it back to you. So you're welcome certainly to review and provide comments. We did hold a stakeholders meeting. You might recall when we started the process, one of the first things we did was reach out to a number of different groups, architects, engineers, design, you know, realtors, so on and so forth, and received input from them. We explained our intent, got input from them, and then used a lot of that input to inform the process as we developed the document. So we met again with them recently to kind of review it, the first draft with them. Their comments are due here, I think, next week. We'll do a presentation to the joint meeting to the City Council Planning Commission. It's just an introduction of the document. We'll explain it. We'll walk through the changes, explain the rationale. We're not really looking for a particular vote. Where we are looking for sort of a heads up, because our intent would be, unless collectively there's a stop, the intent would be that we would probably now start talking about some type of public rollout where we're presenting it to the public and going through. Now, I don't know if that will be just going to the Planning Commission, you know, or if it'll maybe some other version. I don't know that yet. We have to talk through that. Kind of depends what happens at the joint meeting. And then, you know, we'll just keep working through that process towards adoption with whatever revisions are necessary. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, just to clarify. So the information we were provided with previously, it has been modified based on the ongoing meetings, or it has not?
No. The recent emails you received only are reflecting the draft documents as presented to the stakeholders. We've not made any changes. That stakeholder meeting was a week or two ago.
Yeah, it was last Tuesday. It seems longer.
It does.
And we asked for their written comments or emails if they had suggestions. We asked for it by this Friday just so we'd have that input to share with the Commission and Council on the 26th. And then I think we have, or we will be suggesting that perhaps once the Commission and Council have a little bit of time to digest the material further, that we'd like comments from you. I think we said around August 5th or something like that, just to keep the process moving, see what kind of changes people might be suggesting so that we can evaluate how much more we need to go back and look at.
Okay. And if I could add one other quick comment, just so you're not surprised, and you'll hear this when we present it, but you know, when you look at the revision to the citywide guidelines, it's, you know, they should be self-evident. The red lines are very clear in what the intents are, and it's very familiar to you. When you look at the new district architectural guidelines, that document is, or that is intended to be a different effort. It is not it's not intending to dictate to designers. Kind of along the lines we had a conversation here about the 3-foot setback, it's really meant to inspire designers. And so we provide a lot of images. We try to provide a vision statement, an intent statement of where we're headed. And I know Carl could speak to this, but, you know, trying to give developers a sense of what makes each district unique and asking them to respond architecturally without dictating to them how they should respond. So it's a little bit different approach, and there's more to it than I'm describing. You'll see more, but I want to make sure you understand it. As you click on that link and you start going through that web experience, you'll understand that that's the angle we're coming from.
Okay, great. Mark, if I may, and I know we've moved to staff reports, just a question. The posting of the projects online, which, again, you guys do just an awesome job with that. I love having that information there because it really provides all of us with insight as well as our citizens with insight on the projects. What is the, I don't know, trigger or the step that moves it from being presented to us to being posted on the website for the project? So when we list those as part of our information that we have on the website for the projects, what actually triggers that being posted?
I'll let Brett speak to it.
Once we receive an application, we go through it, try to make sure it's complete, not in every detail. So when we refer it out to other city departments and outside agencies for them to look at it and get their comments to us, that's when we post it on the web initially. That initial posting stays there. Now, there may be iterations coming back and forth as we provide them the applicant comments and they respond, but we don't update every time we get a new submittal. It stays the original one until such time as we're ready to go to hearing. So once it's noticed for hearing and the staff report is done, that's when the final version that we're bringing forward to the Planning Commission and Council comes and gets posted on the site.
I think I would add, too, though, that the whole purpose is to get, you know, the community and the commissioners and others aware of the project early on. And then hopefully if they have enough interest or, you know, want to find out more about the project, they can always come into the department and see the latest submittal. Right. They can see the latest information. It's just a housekeeping thing. It would be very hard to keep up with everything online. So it's intended to let people know something's happening. If you're interested, come see us.
Sure. Well, and again, I've had positive feedback from the community. I know that it's benefited me. I don't know about the other commissioners, but it's nice to have that information available. And yes, understanding that there will be changes, but thank you for all your efforts on providing that information. Okay. And with that, if there are no other items, then we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.